Call the meeting of the Public Safety Crime Prevention Policy and Finance Committee to order. Clerk will take the roll.
Chairman Cornish, Vice Chairman Woodard,
here.
Representative Mullery, Representative Doubt, Representative Gauthier,
here.
Representative Grunhagen,
here.
Representative Hilty,
here.
Representative Johnson,
yes, here.
Representative Kelly, Representative Kiefer, Representative Kreisel, Representative Leidiger,
here.
Representative Mariani, Representative McDonald, Representative Moran,
here.
Representative Nornes,
here.
Representative Slocum, Representative Smith,
here.
We do apparently have a quorum. First bill on the agenda is House File 2041. Oh, I'm sorry. We need to act on the minutes as well. Chair would entertain a motion to approve the minutes from last meeting.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Representative Gauthier has moved approval of the minutes. Any discussion? All those in favor of that motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion prevails. Minutes are adopted. First bill on the agenda is House File 2041. Representative Abler.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. This is the dental bill, and my witness isn't here, but I think we can get through without his presence. I don't know if he's been delayed or what, but
Abler, where is this bill going?
To the floor.
We need to move your bill.
Oh, is it? Goes back to my committee. Okay, back to Health Finance. That's why I have staff. So I think
Representative Abler, the chair will move.
Oh, thank you.
That House File 2041 be recommended to pass and return to the Health and Human Services Finance Committee.
Thank you. And Mr. Chair, you requested this bill here, and not so much you, but here. You and your staff, Mr. Chair. And so perhaps if they have questions, I could stand for those questions just in the interest of time.
Can you adjourn?
If the department wants to say something, that would be fine.
Well, Representative Abler, perhaps you could give us a brief description of what the bill does and why it might be before this committee.
Okay, well, it has to do with background checks, and I think you've had a bunch of those discussions. Each and every group has had a different version, and the dental board has a background check, and then the unique part about theirs is they don't have a bar that bars somebody permanently. They just have the ability to use the information to decide what they want to do with the individual. So, and it goes through the mechanism, talks about fingerprints, et cetera. So, do you want more than that, or is that sufficient?
Well, Representative Abler, from my perspective, I'm glad to hear that there is no bar involved in this. I think that we've kind of gone to the extreme in background checks. So pretty soon we're going to have a background check just to be a citizen. And,
you and I agree on that, Mr. Chair.
Questions for the author? Is there anyone in the audience that wishes to testify for or against this bill? Looks like you're going to get off really easy, Representative Abler.
That's what the police said the last time they pulled me over.
With good
No same or similars, Mr. Chair.
Well, seeing no discussion, the chair will renew his motion that House File 2041 be recommended to pass and sent to the Health and Human Services Finance Committee. All those in favor of that motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you for accommodating my schedule, Mr. Chair. I really appreciate it, and thank you for your attention.
Bill, we should adjourn before you give up. Nope.
be writing that down, Sparky.
They'll all be in the list.
Okay, Representative Lohmer, House File 2836.
We've done all the required.
Representative Lohmer, let's see, I suppose I'll have to move with him. Where's it down?
HHS Finance.
Okay. Representative McDonald, would you like to move Representative Lohmer's bill?
Yes, I would.
To HHS Finance.
I'd like to move her bill to HHS Finance.
Okay, Representative McDonald moves House File 2836. Be recommended to pass and go to HHS Finance. Representative Lohmer, go ahead and present your bill as you wish.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. First of all, before I start, we do have a delete all amendment.
Okay, Representative McDonald, do you want to move the DE1 amendment?
So moved.
Okay, Representative McDonald moves the DE1 amendment. Any questions? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. Bill's in proper form, so go ahead, Representative Lohmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, I do have an oral amendment as well, so we just have one more thing to do, and okay. We want to delete Section 2 out of the new bill. And that is because yesterday I got a call from the department, and they were concerned about the reciprocity issue, so we're just going to remove that part of the bill.
Representative Mullery, you're okay with you folks? The oral amendment to delete Section 2, you said?
Yeah.
Okay, with the chair, we'll move Representative Lohmer's amendment to delete Section 2. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I've brought forth House File 2836 before you on behalf of the Lower St. Croix Valley Fire Department. This group of small cities in my district is responsible for answering emergency calls on the I-94 corridor between Woodbury and Wisconsin. And I have testifiers here with me today that can explain the problem to you that they've been dealing with for years with emergency vehicles and reimbursement. So with me today I have Jim Stanley, Bert Haar, and Dick Glasgow from the communities, and then I also have Bert McAlpine to answer questions. First of all, we're going to have Bert. Do you want to go first?
Sir, would you state your name and title and go ahead and begin?
Mr. Chair and members, thank you. My name is Burl Haar. I'm here today in my capacity as a volunteer member of the Board of Directors for the Lower St. Croix Valley Fire Protection District. Excuse me. The district, as has been mentioned, is a joint powers district and encompasses the cities of Afton, Lakeland, Lakeland Shores, Lake St. Croix Beach, and St. Mary's Point. Each city has two members on the board, and I'm one of the representatives for Afton. The department has firefighters, 29 volunteer firefighters, and EMTs. And as Representative Lohmer mentioned, provides fire EMS hazardous material services to the five cities, as well as the St. Croix River from the Hudson Bridge, essentially, to Afton State Park, basically. And, of course, the section on the interstate highway that we're talking about from the Hudson Bridge to Manning Avenue. We have a long-range planning process in the district where we periodically look at issues that are affecting our community and our ability to deliver services to our community. And in 2006, we were in one of those long-range planning proceedings and determined that the number of calls to the interstate highway had been increasing substantially, and that it was increasingly an issue for us from a budgetary standpoint. The finding was increased traffic on I-94 will increase the need for services, but with very little revenue recovery. We subsequently took a closer look at it and determined that approximately around 10%, maybe a little over 10% now, of the calls that we make are to respond to emergency medical situations on the interstate highway. Now, that may not sound like a huge percentage, But the fact is that the cost of providing those services is substantial, and our ability to recover revenue from providing those services is limited. The cost stems from a national fire department protocol, which requires bringing more vehicles to situations that are on high traffic areas, such as interstate highways, and particularly a fairly busy interstate highway like I-94, which is of course the main interstate coming in from the east. So we have to bring extra vehicles there, extra equipment, and by the nature of the situations that occur there, we oftentimes have the department has to stay there longer than it would on most normal runs. So the costs we find of answering calls on I-94 are significantly more than answering a call just within the district. There, we've estimated that the cost per run to I-94 is a little over $1,000, whereas the average call within the district is 800, right around 800. Obviously, it varies so much, but there's a significant difference. Also, this is a budgetary issue because our ability to recover revenues from providing those services is more limited. Virtually all the patients are out of state, very difficult to track them down for recovering insurance payments and so on. Many refuse service or services once there. So it's a much sketchier situation. And the revenue recovery is a significant issue for us because we rely on the revenues from providing emergency services for our budget. We have two sources of revenue for the district. One, of course, are the levy taxes on the cities, the member cities, and the other is the our ability to bill for services for ambulance services, emergency services, and so on. And this is a significant source of revenue for us. So the runs to I-94 have created an issue for us, and that's why we started an inquiry to look more deeply into what might be done to address that. We started a dialogue. Well, first of all, we took it to the cities, and all of the cities in OSEC signed resolutions to direct us to go ahead and try and find a means of addressing the situation. And these are cities where the fire service budget is a pretty significant chunk of the city budget. In many cases, it's the largest piece of the city budget. So it's something that very much has their attention. And we entered into a wider dialogue then with legislators, with county officials, with state officials, try and scope the size of this. We learned that it did indeed potentially have broader implications. 28 of the 87 counties in Minnesota have one of the major interstate highways running through them, I-35, 90 or 94. 380 of the 743 fire departments in the state are in one of these 28 counties, and 304 of the 380, in other words, a substantial number, are providing services to communities of 10,000 or less. So we're typically talking about smaller cities, smaller departments, where providing these services is potentially a significant revenue issue. So we believe that House File 2836 is a very important first step at trying to get our hands around the nature of this this situation, because we do believe it certainly is a significant budget issue for us, and we believe it potentially is for communities across the across the state of Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Who is next? Sir, if you give your name and title, and go ahead.
My name is Jim Stanley. I'm Deputy Chief of Lower St. Clair Valley Fire Department. The issue, it isn't just $200 difference, it's an additional $1,000 per call because of the nature of the beast being up on the highway. Once we get committed to the highway, whether it be for a fire, an accident, even with cancel, we have to remain up on the highway, stage our vehicles to protect State Patrol, protect the Washington County deputies, and protect the tow truck drivers. We provide a safe working environment for any emergency responders up on the highway. And that's why these changes came about in 2004 to 2006. And so during that time period, it became a lot larger impact on our department, both financially and personnel-wise. But it isn't strictly the medical calls. It's any emergency that happens on the highway and the frontage road. And it's increasing, and it's going to get a lot worse with the closure of the 36 Stillwater Bridge and the increased traffic with the I-94 through our area.
Did it? All right. Thank you, sir. And if you could say your name and title and begin.
Richard Glasgow. I'm a council member of the city of Lakeland. You know, it is a significant part of our budget. I'm here to represent the five cities and say, you know, it is a hardship on us to go up on 94. I'm also on the fire board, so I see the work that these guys do every day. And, you know, some relief would be very appreciated, especially in these tough times economically for the cities. So, thank you.
Mr. Doyle.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is O.J. Doyle. I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Ambulance Association. I'm also a retired paramedic, and I will be brief. Thanks for the opportunity for presenting today. Just to give a little bit of background, there is a huge inequity in the emergency medical services system in the United States of America. As you're all familiar with, after 9/11, there was a considerable amount of money that was put into various funds to help pay for emergency response. Emergency medical services receives 4% of those dollars. 4%. The rest is going to any number of other areas that we can get into in another hearing. Other problems are Wyoming receives $31.96 per capita. New York State receives $4 per capita. So there are problems. In Minnesota, we're unusual. We have 62% of all of our emergency responders are volunteers. So we are in real problems as our demographics are changing and our population is aging. We are heavily dependent on people such as you see here at the table. Changes in reimbursement for emergency response have decreased $37 million a year as a result of federal policy changes. And as a result of the Balanced Budget Act of 1997, Minnesota has lost in the last 10 years for emergency response reimbursement $72 million. Unfortunately, this dumps the problem on the state legislatures. And we have tried to do everything we can within our own organization, such as the Minnesota Ambulance Association, to help address these problems. This excellent legislation serves as a foundation for establishing a pilot project for identifying the extent of the problem of the uncompensated care, the dangers on responding on interstate highways, and our association, through our board, has given their word that we will work without expectation of compensation on a volunteer basis to expand the study statewide, help collect data, work with the fire department and legislators to put together a statewide report on the extent of the problem and come up with recommendations. And I thank you very much for the opportunity to address this committee.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Doyle. Any Representative Gauthier?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Lohmer, I see in line 1.12 says located in Washington County. And my question to you is, how is this different than emergency responses in my city of Duluth, which is a border town, in St. Louis County, or in Coochin County at International Falls? Why should Washington County receive this and not other border counties?
Representative Lohmer?
Thank you, Mr. Representative Gauthier, for the question. Well, all of the ones in Washington County are volunteer. I'm not sure if that's the case for your district.
Yes.
It is. Duluth is full-time.
Mr. Chair, follow up.
That's
true, but costs are costs, whether they're volunteer or professional. And my concern is we're just carving out one county when we have, you know, and we could go through every county along the border and have this discussion, I guess. And so I'm just wondering what's unique about Washington County that they need this versus other counties.
Is it just because it's a pilot project, or is it?
That's what I was going to say. We have identified a problem for our communities, and we're trying to do a pilot to see how we can come up with a fix for them. Basically, this has been a long-term problem.
That's a good answer.
Mr. Doyle?
Mr. Chairman, if I might, in representative of this initiative you see before you today started in 2007.
Okay. Representative Johnson and then McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Lomar, is an open appropriation from the general fund. What kind of money are we talking about here? I know we got to pay for public safety, and that's one of our main responsibilities, government, but we need to have some idea what we're talking about.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, I believe it's between $10,000 and $15,000, and I think we're moving here from here to HHS finance, and so we're going to be asking for the money to come out of that budget for this pilot program.
And Representative McDonald, followed by Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just trying to find Representative Lomar the end date for this pilot program. Is there an end date? I see the beginning date is 2013, but the effective date is July 1st of 2012, but is the end date then the end of fiscal year 13?
Well,
Representative Lomar?
Mr. Chair and Representative McDonald, it's January 15th of 2013 is when the report will be prepared and forwarded to the legislature by then.
Representative Smith.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Mr. Doyle, refresh my memory. How much do you calculate the Lower St. Croix Valley Fire Department is losing with the quote-unquote problematic collections on a yearly basis?
Mr. Doyle?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Smith, I represent roughly 300 ambulance services, and I'm really not in a position to be able to answer that question with any accuracy. I'd refer the deputy chief, if I might.
Mr. Chairman, yes, I would like an answer on the Lower St. Croix Valley.
In the last year that I put together, we had 48 calls up there, and so it would be, and I'm not saying lost ambulance revenue. I'm saying what it cost the fire department to do their job up on the highway was $40,000.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Smith.
Chief, do you have a handle on how much of that $40,000 was not collected?
$40,000 was not collected. I'm not including the ambulance billing. That's a separate issue. Some of that ambulance, the billing, what happens when we go up there on the highway is everybody calls 911 the minute a car spins out and goes in the ditch or flips upside down. And oftentimes we get up there and there are no injuries, but now we're committed to the scene and we remain on the scene until everybody is safely off the highway, state patrol, the tow truck driver and such. I have some information here that shows the calls during this period of time and how many of them were canceled, which just means that we didn't make patient contact. It doesn't mean we didn't get up on the highway and position our vehicles.
Mr. Chairman, of the chief and of Mr. Doyle, what I'm trying to get at is what do we project as a potential dollar amount? This pilot project is not only going to be a fund as a source to pay, but it's also going to be monitoring and verifying that the projected dollar amounts I'm hearing about, $40,000 per year in the Lower St. Croix Valley Fire Department, and you represent 300 such entities, and so can I just assume 300 times 40,000 is the potential iceberg under this tip.
Mr. Dole.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Smith, although on its face it may appear that way, but we're actually trying to do in the ambulance industry, and frankly, we're very proud of the fact that we're light years ahead of every other state. Last year, you passed legislation called Community Paramedic, which is the first kind of its program in the United States. This year, you are very close to passing the second part of that, which deals with reimbursement under medical assistance, which is shown to save millions of dollars. What this is part of is we're trying to identify the fiscal environment in which the EMS community is now in and is going to be moving towards. Anybody, as a former paramedic, I can tell you, anybody who believes that the days of calling 911, a rig shows up, you treat, stabilize the patient, you take them to the hospital and go back to the station, are going to be here in 10 years is wrong. The entire system is going to devolve, it is going to change, it is going to evolve, and is going to be closely integrated into large healthcare systems. What we need is we need to have a better understanding of what the financial implications are of what we do now and how we can get a better handle on those future costs by innovative programs such as the Community Paramedic Bill, which is up later on today in committee. And so this isn't a backdoor way so that 10 years from now, assuming I'm still upright, can come back and say, well, remember 10 years ago we got all this information together? Well, now we are back and we are asking for $1 billion to help keep us all in operation and help pay the bill.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Doyle, Smith. I heard you testify that you want to get a handle on costs. That's what I'm trying to look at. I'm going to vote for this bill. But in getting a handle, I'll skip to the third question I had here. What performance measures are you building into this bill to monitor how much is being paid and how you can get a handle, to use your words, on the problematic collection, because it's the users of the ambulance services that if we expect them to pay, then how are you going to get them to do that? There's no question there. Here's a question or two. Looking at the picture, you're the lobbyist, the expert representing 300 ambulance services. What do you think is owed on a yearly basis on problematic collections with ambulance service being provided? Service being provided and not paid for. How much do you think is owing across the state?
Mr. Doyle?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Smith, it's impossible to answer because we have ambulance services in Minnesota that are volunteer-based that do not charge. They ask for a donation. There are ambulance services in the state of Minnesota who charge what some would consider an exorbitant amount of money because they're air ambulances. They have a physician, a critical care nurse, a respiratory therapist, and a pulmonologist on board, and it costs $15,000 to transport them, but it also saves your life. So it's very difficult for me to, and I'm not trying to avoid the answer, it's just it's very difficult to get a handle on this. It's also, we have a number of services up in the boundary waters. It's extraordinarily expensive to provide care up there because of the terrain. They have to have specialized vehicles, which you don't have in Washington County because you have roads with actual, you know, paved roads. So there are so many differences. We are talking about an industry here which is barely 30 years old. Emergency medical services as an industry is not very old. It's relatively new. Paramedics are have only come about within the past 35 to 40 years. There are a lot of changes. It's a very dynamic industry. And
one of the biggest challenges that we have is trying to collect data. Now, the EMS Regulatory Board is the entity that regulates emergency medical services in Minnesota. They have instituted something called a MnSTAR program where they are collecting the type of data you are asking for, but we do not have the results yet because it's a program which is currently being set up.
Mr. Chairman, good.
Representative Smith.
Good. Then the report will be due in 2015 from this pilot program, yes or no?
Or Mr. Doyle.
I'm sorry. 2013, although I believe that that was the part of the provision was deleted in Section 2. So there is no date for a study, if I'm not incorrect.
Well, hold it, Mr. Chairman.
Where is that?
So we have a pilot program and there will be no written study produced?
There will be, Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry. Representative Smith, there will be a written report. The Minnesota Ambulance Association has voluntarily produced reports previously to the legislature on volunteerism, on injuries on
Mr.
the
Chairman,
job.
Mr. Chairman, last two questions. When will that report be available for the legislature?
I cannot give you a specific date because I'm not in a position to be able to ask the president of my association specifically to give me a date, and I can't do that. I don't
Mr.
know.
Mr. Chairman, last question.
Representative Smith?
When that report comes forward, will it tell us two things? How much money has been paid out and therefore is owing on a yearly basis? And secondly, will it have any suggestions on your testimony how to quote, get a handle on problematic collections?
Yes. Mr. Chairman, Representative Smith, yes.
Thank you.
Mr. Doyle, would it be safe to say that it's you probably do a little bit of work on this before it gets to HHS Finance to answer some of these questions, and then also being a pilot project will answer some of these questions in itself. I mean, how much money is expended, how many claims are made, we'll be able to get an idea. If this is put into effect after this pilot program is done, might give us an indication of better firm grasp on the amount of claims and the amount of dollars we're talking about. I imagine that who knows what will happen. They could put a blank amount in this account and it could be drained immediately, or if the claims aren't so high, it could sit in there for a while, but at least we'll get some idea after a period of time what we're going to need to finance it in perpetuity, if it goes that far. So.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hilty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Kind of picking up on what Representative Smith was getting at here about the absence of the requirement for a report. Since Section 2 was deleted, presumably, according to Representative Lohmer, because of reciprocity issues, I'm wondering if it might not be a better idea, instead of having deleted the entire section, to just delete paragraph B and leave paragraph A of Section 2 in place.
Mr. Doyle, you want to address that? You must have had a reason you deleted Section 2. Why don't you explain answer to that question? And
I was trying to help come up with a date which we thought we could gather enough information that it might, Mr. Chairman, perhaps, and Representative Hilty, you would want to not deal with the section you deleted, but simply put in a report will be due to the legislature, to the chairs, the ranking minority members, and whomever else you feel appropriate on the date that is in there, July 1st, 2015, whatever the date is, as a separate line. It might be less confusing than try to resurrect the part of the revision that was deleted.
Mr. Diebel, there's usually boilerplate language for reports due like January 15th and then the respective chairs of the committee that affects, right? I mean, it wouldn't be too hard to come up with something like that.
Mr. Chair and members, that would be one option, but it would be a pretty long oral amendment. What, another option would be to reconsider the amendment and then simply propose a new amendment to delete paragraph B.
Well, Mr. Chair, I would be interested to know why, what the necessity of the deletion of paragraph A in section 2 was to begin with, since it doesn't seem to be related in any way to reciprocity, and it does describe the process whereby the report would be created and the date by which it would be due.
Mr. Doyle.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hilty, we have frankly had a little bit of a challenge in dealing with some of the adjoining state ambulance associations. I have personally contacted all of them and asked if they would consider meeting to discuss this issue, to pursue this at their individual state legislatures somehow or other. After several contacts, there has been no response whatsoever. I'm a little reluctant to continue to try and pursue that route at this point in time. And that was the reason for the reciprocity language. I really don't think that there's the interest. We were also told, if I might, by the Department of Revenue that this really complicates issues. Reciprocity with other states is a very complicated matter, which is way beyond my pay grade, but I have been told by people much smarter than I that it has been an issue in the past with other issues.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hilty.
Thank you. Well, Mr. Doyle, what I'm saying is I understand what you just said, which is why I understand the necessity for the deletion of paragraph B, but what I'm asking is, wouldn't we solve the question of how the report is supposed to be created and when it's due simply by deleting paragraph B instead of the whole section?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. Is it appropriate to reconsider that amendment?
Sure, we can do anything we want.
You're in public safety now, Lomer.
This is a fun. Okay.
Yeah, we can do that, reconsider it, bring it up again, and then reform it.
Maybe I'll just bring this up and see what everyone here thinks about it. But in Section 2, we'll delete, after 2013, the Commissioner of Revenue in consultation with, or the Commissioner of, yeah. So it would say, by January 15, 2013, the Emergency Medical Services Regulatory Board, continue that paragraph and then delete Section B. I think that's what you're saying, Representative Hilty?
Yes.
Sounds copacetic to everybody?
Yes. We need a motion.
Representative Don had a question. What?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to offer that amendment. For the motion to reconsider, is that right, John?
Yeah, we'll have to do the motion to reconsider. Or do you want to change the DE1 amendment, or do you want to reconsider the whole amendment?
Just reconsider the whole amendment. Just reconsider the oral amendment. That deleted Section 2.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I just wondered if we had to do the whole motion to reconsider, if we could just amend the DE1. But okay, motion to reconsider the oral amendment on deleting Section 2. Any discussion? Okay, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, now. So now we have the whole bill as was presented without the DE1.
It is still the DE1.
Or DE1. Yeah. So we'll scratch paragraph. So Representative McDonald, the amendment that you'd like to offer would be on line 1.25, after the comma, strike the Commissioner of Revenue in consultation with. And then on, starting on the back page in 2.9 to 2.11, strike that paragraph B.
Yes,
Mr. Sound right? Okay, everybody's understood the amendment. And Mr. Deeble, you got that? Okay, any questions? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. Now, we have it in a different form. And Representative Hilton, what did you? You done?
I am, thanks.
And Representative Grunhagen.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to the members under, you know, Section 1, Subdivision 3, the it talks about reimbursement. The board may determine the percentage of eligible claims being reimbursed based on available funding. I mean, there's in healthcare, there's basically three ways, you know, three areas of reimbursement: Medicaid, Medicare, or the private sector. You think there should be a little bit more definitive as far as what type of reimbursement you're looking for?
Mr. Drew?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Grunhagen, I'm not an expert in this area, but we have railroad reimbursement, we have workers' comp, we have automobile insurance. There are a number of uncompensated care funds in other states. I'm a little concerned if it were to be, my personal feeling is to try and list all of them, I think would be a bit of an overwhelming task. But it's you want to do.
Yeah, Mr. Chair.
Representative Grunhagen.
I'll just follow up comment. It's just that, you know, the pricing of health care reminds me a little bit of selling watches in Mexico when I was in the Marine Corps. You have the list price and then the actual reimbursement price. And, you know, I mean, health care nowadays, the pricing is just convoluted. And, so I don't know if it'd be helpful to define a little bit better or not. I mean, it's kind of open-ended on how you're going to be reimbursed and versus a reference point. Because every medical billing is discounted nowadays. And, you know, some more, some less. But anyway, just a thought. To come up with a better fiscal idea of what the reimbursement is actually going to run.
Mr. Chairman, if I might.
Mr. Royal.
Gentlemen, the General Accountability Office in Washington recently completed a study in which they found that ambulance services are reimbursed at 6% below costs in the United States, 22.7% below cost in rural Minnesota. No one's even breaking even. They're having to expand into training, transfers, things such as this. That's why I'm a little concerned about, I don't know how we could establish a set price. The EMS Regulatory Board is composed of people who run ambulance services, who run hospitals, who have a much better idea on the specifics of reimbursement, and I believe that they could be trusted to come up with some sort of a responsible mechanism.
This is a point of interest is, when did we start to, you've been around for quite a while, when did we start to kind of go downhill in the ambulance reimbursement? Was there ever a time where it was fully funded, we didn't have any worries? How far back?
Actually, there were two seminal moments. The year that Minnesota Care passed, and I was here, but I don't remember what year, 91, 92, early 90s, what happened? What was it, 92? Part of Minnesota Care mandated that all health care providers accept Medicare payment as payment in full. One medical provider was exempted from that, and that was ambulance service. So ambulance services were allowed to balance bill. So those were the halcyon days for ambulance services until 1997, when Congress passed the Balanced Budget Act and, through contested rulemaking, established a nationwide fee schedule which did not take into consideration quality of care, training of individuals, labor markets. So the state of Tennessee saw their rates double. Minnesota saw theirs decrease by 38%.
It's the reason you're seeing a decrease in ambulance services now. They are being, they are closing the doors. They can no longer handle the tax subsidies. They're not being reimbursed. You're seeing larger services being asked to come over and cover those areas. It's becoming a real problem. 1997 was about the straw that broke the camel's back, in my opinion, thanks to the Medicare changes.
What if, Mr. Doyle, what about, has Auto Launch hurt you folks much? Mayo's Auto Launch, when they just vault a helicopter out there, whether they sometimes are really needed or not, and they make it there first, and the ambulance has to turn around on an unreimbursed call or not?
Mr. Chairman, that's an excellent question. I cannot respond particularly to Mayo's program. I do know that there's a significant record of lives being saved by the Auto Launch program. En route, it is very difficult sometimes for volunteers who do not have extensive training to recognize life-threatening injuries, particularly when the patient is up walking around. My lobbying partner, Buck McAlpin in the back, can relate to an accident victim who was helping extricate people from cars. He had a ruptured spleen and just about collapsed and died at the scene because there was not experienced personnel there and immediately to identify that situation. An Auto Launch is what saved his life.
Got one more question. Representative McDonald, did you have a further follow-up or anything?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, just in the issue of time, since we have a little, I thought this could be a learning experience for myself and some others. A question online, I believe it's 1.17 to 1.18, where it says, provided emergency services on an interstate highway to an unidentified patient. Is that unidentified patient from out of state, which says on 1.616, and is that unidentified patient has no coverage, health insurance at all? And is that why, of course, the reason for this bill? I presume why. I just wanted to correct.
Mr. Doyle.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I don't recall the specifics on that. If I'm understanding your point, in Minnesota, you request emergency care, you receive an ambulance regardless of ability to pay or source of payment. There is no discrimination in the state. That's why the uncollectibles are so high, and I'm not sure if that's your specific question. If not, I'm not really clear on what, in this context, identified patient needs. I apologize.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative McDonald.
Well, if I'm injured in an accident, I carry insurance, auto coverage insurance. And if an ambulance is dispatched, I presume that my insurance, since I pay them a lot of money for the last 20-some years, will pay it. And is this identified person, is that the person that doesn't carry insurance, auto insurance? And is there that many of them? You said $40,000 worth of in Laura Sweeting Croy alone. Must be a lot of people not carrying insurance on their car, and they must be from out of state, because that's what it seems to indicate. 1.16 is out of state resident, and 1.18 is unidentified patient. So I'm wondering if that's the, am I correct in my assumption?
Deputy Chief?
Mr. Chair and Representative, an unidentified patient may be someone sitting in their car in the ditch that never called an ambulance. It's everyone else that drives by the interstate that call the ambulance. So we arrive on scene. They're not a billable patient. So we have gone up on the highway. And I think we're really keying in on this as being strictly EMS ambulance only. And it's emergency response to the highway. It includes grass fires that we go up to. It includes... you know, we may have a sick patient on the shoulder of the road, and the way people drive nowadays, the standards have it where we need to roll multiple vehicles. We roll two engines and one tanker, specialty vehicle. All of this is to make that a safe working environment for the injured people and for the emergency workers. So, but the unidentified patient, you know, we go up there, we don't know They are truly unidentified until they become a patient.
Mr. Chairman?
Honorable McDonald.
And I certainly agree that those who are volunteer fire departments, cities, should be have an opportunity to be reimbursed their expenses, but the patient is the person in the accident, the victim. They don't have insurance. Is that why the claim's not being paid? That's all I want to know, is who's not paying their claim, and that's why this you need the reimbursement. Someone's not paying the claim. Are they uninsured?
Deputy Chair and Representative, they're not necessarily not insured, but they're underinsured. With the economy the way it is, everybody are lowering their limits to lower
premiums.
Their premium. And I guarantee you that the trauma center gets paid before the ambulance service. And when our bill gets there, they're exhausted. Now it becomes a private pay, and there is no money. There's a reason they lowered their limits. So we lose out a lot because of patients we do transport are underinsured, and the trauma center drains their funds before the EMS people get paid. And Representative Smith, with our service, you take 100% of our billing, 9% of it is unbillable, 35% of that is Medicare, Medicaid, and then from that point below is what we consider private pay, and of those people, then we try to collect whether they have insurance or not, or if they are truly a private pay out of their pocket. And but this is our entire service. This isn't just up on the highway, but just to kind of give you a breakdown of how our service is.
Representative McDonald?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I support the bill, but I have a question for Mr. Diebel. In line 1.16, when it states that the emergency service to an out-of-state resident on a highway, interstate highway, does that mean an in-state resident won't get, if he's unable to pay, that this board won't reimburse the claim to an ambulance service or the local fire department?
Mr. Doyle.
Mr. Chairman, there's a dichotomy. Right now, under state law, ambulance charges are reimbursed by law. First responders are not reimbursed by law except under automobile, no-fault auto insurance. Ambulance services must respond. First responders are not required by law to respond. They are by some local ordinances. So what you have is you have kind of a melding of a tiered response system, so it's very difficult to differentiate the funding and reimbursement sources. As the Assistant Chief just mentioned, you could send a bill to a Minnesota resident under revenue recapture. You could just send a regular bill like you would a utility bill and say, we provided these services, you owe us the money. There's you can create an EMS taxing district. There's any number of options, and I don't want to belabor the point, but it's complications for emergency response. It's a very complicated system. It's all I work on, and I'm learning things every day.
Let's kind of, if you don't mind, I'd like to bring this to a close, and we'll let the bill go on to the next committee, but I think it's obvious that it really needs some work, and I think you need to bring some more people in. There's too many questions that were unanswered. Bring some more experts in, get a little better fiscal and answer to some of these more detailed questions, and I think it'll help out a lot. Maybe take another look at any amendments you might want to make or for clarity for the next committee. But we did the best we could here. It's but there's a lot of, in your defense, a lot of guesswork. I mean, because we don't know how many claims and how much the ambulances charge and how many are going to go uninsured or disappear. So I suppose that's kind of a hard fiscal note to really nail down. So then that's probably the reason, it's a pilot project rather than just going in whole hog. So any questions from members? Representative Lohmer, any closing statements or anything, or before we move your bill?
I just want to thank you so much for hearing our bill today and considering, and hope that you can support it. Thank you.
Is So, Representative McDonald, would you like to renew your motion for 2836?
Yes, I do. I'd like to renew my motion to pass 2836 and move it to HHS Finance.
As amended.
As amended.
Okay, Representative McDonald moves 2836 as amended, recommended to pass, move to HHS Finance. Any questions? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Hit the gavel before I said a word. You're on your way. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
And the next scheduled meeting is tomorrow at 10:15, but we don't know yet if we're going to have the meeting. We'll let you know this afternoon, so stay tuned to Facebook, internet, and email. Meeting adjourned.